then turns into negative behavior on our part, which then the child downloads and it becomes a part of them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about how, you know, kids are just so intuitive with what they need. And yet here we come in as adults trying to like force them into society and you need to sit in a classroom for this long. And, you know, one of the things I do on TikTok is like silly ecstatic dance because that is so healing for our bodies. We need to shake it out. Research shows when animals go through a traumatic experience, they change their breathing or do breath work, if you will, and tremor. And so it's actually really healing for our bodies when we have trapped emotions, tough experiences, to just shake it out, let it out. And so kids know that. They know they need to like get up and move around. They know what they need. So I think it'd be so helpful if we were more like conversational. I think that's kind of what you've been talking about on your TikToks as well, like having this dialogue between them, like helping them along, scaffolding along the way to help them. What do you need? How can I help you through this? Rather than just shut up and sit in the corner, you know?
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Oh, here we are. Perfect. Hello. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Mr. Chaz, and today I'm joined here with Janine Kreft, also known as Kreft's Couch. We are here today to talk about how to break the cycle of generational trauma. I think we are both on the same side of TikTok, and I really appreciate her videos, and they're really engaging and they have a lot of value in them. And so I wanted to bring her on so that we could have this conversation together. And I know a lot of people are going to love seeing and talking to her. So before we get started, we didn't do this. I didn't have a bunch of questions ahead of time that I told her. It's just kind of a general, like, this is what we're going to talk about. This is the conversation that I want to have. But before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself. You introduce yourself and who you are and, you know, what you believe. Introduce yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that initial introduction. So I'm a psychologist and I actually work full time for the VA. So I see veterans telehealth to their homes. And I've been doing that since 2014, working for the VA. So that's kind of my day job. So a lot of training in PTSD, trauma, depression, anxiety, all that stuff. And then after all my kind of really formal traditional education, I started to kind of immerse myself more in the holistic route, like quantum physics, energy type psychology stuff. And that just really got me excited. So I've really trained in a lot of different modalities since then, like neuro-linguistic programming, emotion freedom technique tapping, hypnosis, all sorts of fun stuff like that. And so now as my side gig, I just, you know, make videos on TikTok and Instagram.
And we appreciate you for it. So cool. And now, you do podcasts with me now.
Exactly.
Normally the way I start off is I just go for like 15 minutes, sometimes longer than that. And then the guest, I'm going to go for about maybe 5 minutes and talk about, you know, what kind of really sparked this conversation. I made a TikTok about generational trauma. And what I was talking, what I was explaining was, you know, a lot of times, and I've made a few, and one of them was about how timeouts can contribute to it. And what I was explaining, what I was talking about was how, when we as adults, or when our adults, our parents, you know, when they were raising us, and they have their own set of issues that they had. And if we don't, as we were growing up and we had emotional challenges, we were overwhelmed with emotions, or we didn't know what to do with our emotions, as most kids don't when they're young, because that's not something that even a lot of adults necessarily know how to do very well. What it's met with a lot of times is forcing the child away to go away and to figure out on their own, when, you know, it's really something that the adult, the parent, the teacher should help the child to navigate through, navigate with, to give them the tools. But unfortunately, a lot of our parents didn't have the tools. And so our parents, because our parents didn't have the tools, and when we really needed the tools and the times where we were crying out for help to ask for the tools, really, it's met with, you know, you really, the timeouts are, you need to figure out the tools for yourself, or, you know, I'm not going to give it to you. It's not that extension of let me help you through, let me help you solve the problem instead of punish you for the problem. And then as a result, you know, we grow up not necessarily knowing the tools to navigate through our emotions. And then when our kids are having, you know, are misbehaving, or they're overwhelmed in emotion because we don't have the tools, you know, we can't give our child the tools. And a lot of times it actually triggers us even more and frustrates us even more, because it brings up some old, I didn't mention this in the TikTok, but, you know, if I had enough time, I would have. A lot of times it brings up some old, like our own childhood trauma, right? I was coaching a parent. She was talking about how crying is a trigger for her. And we talked a little bit more about like why that was, and unpacked that a little bit. And it was because emotions and crying was unacceptable in her household growing up. It was the suck it up, like, I'll give you something to cry about, you know, kind of mentality, and not, you know, let me help you through whatever the challenge that you're going with and teach you the skills and give you the tools to work through these situations, so that when I'm not there, you know how to work through it. Or really, when you're raising children and they're frustrating you, they're doing something and they're not meeting your expectations, or you feel like they're misbehaved, you have the you have the emotional tools to maybe, whether it is to identify when you are feeling mad or frustrated and doing a breathing technique, whether it is, someone told me, I was actually talking to someone and it was a new one, to kind of help in that moment, things that you can do to help you calm down, to kind of stabilize your own emotions. And I'm going to do it right now. So she said that, like, you can use soda or water, and you get a drink of water and you put it on the bottom of your like tongue underneath, like right here, and you just feel the bubble. So I'm going to do it. This is a good podcast for people. I just realized you're listening to the audio. They're like, I don't know what's going
visualize
on.
Visualize the
question. Right. That's the cue for you to do it. This is the part of the podcast that's interactive and you do at home, right? So what ends up happening is we get frustrated by a lot of times the same cries for help that, you know, that we did, or our siblings did, or that we saw that was met with rejection. And then that becomes something that frustrates us. And then that child, your child, our child, never learns those skills to navigate through their emotions. And then what happens to the emotion when it's not dealt with, when it's not released? It's built up in the body. And I imagine, and I really want to get your take on this, Janine, especially because you mentioned, I wasn't even aware of all of the other stuff that you dived into, but like, maybe answer this question. Where do you think emotion goes when it's pent up and it's not released? Like, what happens?
The Body Keeps a Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk is a really great read on how trauma gets stored in the body. So really similarly, how emotions have a vibrational frequency to them, and tough emotions like shame, guilt, sadness, fear are all really dense. And so they tend to get stuck, trapped in the body at a cellular level. And then this can wreak havoc on the body, can look like physical ailments later down the line. So I think it's so important to be able to learn to process one's emotions and release them. And you're making such a good point about, like, you know, if a parent can't, you know, hold space for their own personal emotions, how are they going to hold space for their child's, right? It's kind of that projection. Well, I can't feel my own, so you can't feel yours, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, so you mentioned that there's health consequences to it too when it's built up. And you know, I think there's the health consequences, and you know, which could, you know, potentially even create or bring about disease. And then there's also the consequence of, you know, just the social consequence, right? Because then now what happens as a result? I'm feeling these feelings, and maybe I don't, maybe I don't say anything about it. And maybe on the outside, I'm not, because some children act out, right? Some children will express that. And they're aware of what their needs. And so it's so interesting. We call them, in the early education space, we call the children who, really, it's become a euphemism for children who act out, but really what it is children who are aware of their needs, right, and are pretty much trying to demand their needs getting met. We call them spirited. And those are the children who are, you know, when we want them to sit down for circle time for 20 minutes, they're up and moving because they know that their body needs to move, and that's good for, they just have this internal know that that's actually better for their development than probably whatever, you know, is going on, you know, at that carpet for 20 minutes sitting, right? That the movement and the learning is more valuable. Like they know that, and they're not willing to just, you know, they're not willing to disobey their natural need to obey whatever the teacher or the structure is saying. And those kids get pegged as spirited. And that really is just a euphemism really for like the bad kid, the kid like who doesn't listen. And it's becomes a label that I think also has negative effects, because now everyone is seeing this child as the bad kid. And so now they're treating this child like the bad kid. And if you treat and tell a child that they're bad, they will meet your expectations. And so now I just, but it all really starts with us and us understanding that whole process really starts with us and us understanding, you know, children, child development, and us understanding, you know, our own emotions and not projecting just our feelings and letting that initial feeling going into another negative thought that then turns into negative behavior on our part, which then the child downloads and it becomes a part of them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about how, you know, kids are just so intuitive with what they need. And yet here we come in as adults trying to like force them into society, and you need to sit in a classroom for this long. And, you know, one of the things I do on TikTok is like silly ecstatic dance, because that is so healing for our bodies. We need to shake it out. Research shows when animals go through a traumatic experience, they change their breathing, or do breath work, if you will, and tremor. And so it's actually really healing for our bodies when we have trapped emotions, tough experiences, to just shake it out, let it out. And so kids know that. They know they need to like get up and move around. They know what they need. So I think it'd be so helpful if we were more like conversational. I think that's kind of what you've been talking about on your TikToks as well, like having this dialogue between them, like helping them along, scaffolding along the way to help them. What do you need? How can I help you through this? Rather than just shut up and sit in the corner, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, what are some good strategies? I mentioned the, someone told me that works for her, the water or the soda with the bubbles underneath the tongue. You know, what are some other ways that you've heard or practice of just kind of help managing our own emotions? Because you know, that's where, you know, that's where it starts, right? So what are some give us some other things, or talk to us.
Yeah. I was EFT tapping, emotion freedom technique tapping, was the first thing that came up. So basically this involves tapping on different acupressure points, like on the face and side of the hand and things like that. And it is so helpful. So this is kind of based on Chinese medicine, all the energy meridians in the body. So really similar to acupuncture, how it gets the energy flowing freely in the body. EFT tapping does a similar thing. And then there's usually some verbal processing along with it. So certainly adults, you know, I use it as a technique to help process and release emotions. And we can show kids how to do it. So especially if the kid's really young, and they're going through this crazy emotional experience, you can even just start tapping on them. Oh, you must be feeling so angry right now, right? I can see you're just feeling so much. It must be so painful to feel, right? And so like literally tapping on them and kind of speaking in wording that they can understand what kind of emotions they're experiencing. And they tend to recover much quicker than adults do because they allow themselves to feel fully and then are very resilient to switch back. Yet we stay stuck in our stuff all the time.
Right. So you tap on the forehead, the side of the eyes.
Yeah, it's like inner eyebrow, outer eyebrow. There's tons of YouTube videos under the eye.
And then you really validate their emotions about how they feel.
Yeah.
The other thing that does is that it's also teaching children about their emotions and what that, you know, what does that feel like? What is that? It helps them to then start expressing their emotions, especially very young children, because one of the ways that children get it out, or that we get it out, is by verbalizing and saying it out loud. And, you know, I imagine that it may even be helpful, maybe even for like an older child, if they're, you know, having them repeat it with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's it, because that's a reason why a lot of kids, very young kids, we see a lot of hitting, kicking, biting, because they don't know how to get it out. And it's just all this pent up energy. And so then a physical response is the only thing that makes sense. It works. It does actually feel better. It does actually get some of that, you know, feeling out and released. But it's not the most productive way that is, you know, healthy for everyone, right? Yourself and the other people around. And so teaching them a different behavior where they can still release that energy, that, you know, that pent up emotion is a good first step. And then also gives you the signal, because you're not always going to know when they're, you know, mad, sad, angry, frustrated, upset, right? You could be doing the dishes. You could be, you know, with, you know, your other child. You could be doing 100 million other things and not always know what's going on in the other room, in the playroom. But then teaching them that skill allows them to then come to you and say like, I'm really frustrated that my puzzle won't fit. And that's a signal like, hey, like I'm going through something right now. Can you help me? It's really how you translate that. And then again, it's another practicing session that you have to teach them to navigate through their emotions. So when they are going through challenging things at school, when you're not there, or in the home with other siblings, with family members, or as they get older, their relationships with their, you know, significant others, managing your own emotion is really important. By the way, not just in the parent child relationship, also in the partner to partner relationship too.
Yeah.
Because if you just let your emotion, and especially when you talk about, you know, domestic violence and people's emotions getting the best of them, and just because they don't know how to navigate their emotions, or they are never taught, and their, you know, emotions could turn violent, and then that's a whole nother issue. So, you know, I can't talk about the importance of these social emotional skills for children enough, but I don't think that we can talk about that without talking about the skills for adults too, because that's, you know, that's, we are, you know, this is who, that's who they're getting it from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it. Kids from 0 to 7 are in that kind of relaxed hypnotic brainwave state, alpha theta waves, in order for them to be able to learn and pick up so much information to become a person in society, to function. And so they are subconsciously picking up every pattern, behavior, belief that the parents have. So it certainly does start with the parents to be able to learn to self-regulate. And I think that's just such a common issue, is that the parents, that emotions were invalidated as a child, so that they just don't know how to teach, you know, their kids how to process them.
Which is, by the way, what I do in my coaching service, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, if you want to get coached. Just going to throw that plug out there. And then let's go to some of the comments, and I'm going to direct them towards you and then add on anything, because these people get to talk to me every week and they don't always get to talk to you. Zane asks, how do us parents deal with the pressure of teaching how to manage emotions when we're also learning how to manage emotions at the same time?
I think just having some compassion with yourself, knowing, you know, you're human, you're not going to do it perfect. That's totally okay. And that's actually really helpful for kids to see you mess up and recover and try again and acknowledge the process. That's okay. You don't have to be perfect, so they can release the pressure off themselves. So I think that would be the most important piece.
Yes. Yes. And I say all the time, because the way that we were parented, or I would also say the education. I don't think it's all just about the individual parent. It's also about the society that we've grown up with and the values that it's pushed through things like the education system. And the education system does value perfectionism rather than, you know, what I call improvenism. And I say, you know, I say, don't be a perfectionist. Be an improvenist. The goal is not to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little bit every day. And when you look at it like that, I think about like in the classroom, because I knew how important it was for them to see me mess up too, because kids think like, oh, like perfect teacher. When like you met, like they're like a little, they're a little surprised when you admit mistakes, and they're like, it really, it takes them off guard a lot of the times. And so like when I realized that, and like also wanted to communicate and teach to them the value of making mistakes and learning from them and admitting you made a mistake and moving on and not dwelling on the mistake, because that's something that really struggles and debilitates their ability to learn. Like it's a whole crying over spilt milk thing. I would pretty much all but announce it that I made the mistake, and then talk about what I was going to do, you know, and now that I made the mistake, to make it better, to apologize, to clean up my mess, to whatever it was. And that was a message I was very loud and clear, you know, as I'm creating the culture in my classroom. And just like you create organizational cultures, just like you create, you know, classroom cultures. Ooh. You can also create, I'm just going to grab another pen. You can also create family cultures as well. And this is the kind of thing that you can do to create that culture. And it's not just about the things that you say, it's about the things that you do too. So admitting your mistakes openly and, you know, with grace, and then also talking about what you're going to do as a result and how you learned is something that you can pick up a lot, like very much on.
Yeah, create some safety, right? In the sense that they can trust you, that, you know, you can make a mistake and recover and move on and not shame yourself forever.
Yeah, for sure. And then once we unlock that part, once they're no longer afraid of making the mistake, then they're more likely to take the risk, right? Yeah. And that's where the learning happens. Right. They're not afraid to try to write their name. And because, you know, they know, and likely they are going to mess up. It's their first time doing it. The first time we do anything, it's likely that we're going to mess up. And one of my favorite, there's this kindergarten program that my friend and mentor and colleague, Myra Sawyers, who's the, I'm just going to name drop real quick, the president of the Virginia Child Care Association. She was a part of this program in the school that I work in called K-STEM, Kindergarten STEM. And one of the most powerful things about this program is that it taught the engineering design process. And it's pretty much like, yeah, you know, you make a plan, you design it, you know, you make sure you get your materials, then you build it, and then you test it with the expectation that it's going to fail, and then you improve upon I think I said like six steps, but it was really five steps. Improve was a part of the steps. The expectation is when you try to build or solve that problem or do that thing, even though you put all this time and effort into designing, that it was going to fail and you were going to work, there was going to be an opportunity for improvement. Or even if it wasn't a complete failure, there was always opportunity for improvement. And it's amazing how I saw it from children who in the previous program, in the four-year-old program, and then going into this five-year-old kindergarten program, or even sometimes because it is a private kindergarten, they can go a year before, and sometimes they're 4 years old. But it's amazing to see the difference in their thought process when they're building or creating or they fail. And it's not just in building, I saw it translate into other things too. And I could even hear it in their languages. They process like, it's okay, we mess up, we can always do better. We can always, like, hear these 4 and 5 year olds with this growth mindset that so many adults don't have and would benefit from so much. And that was, you know, there's a lot of great things about that program. That was always my favorite. You know, it had improvement was built into the process.
I love that.
I think that if we all had that mentality, we wouldn't get so frustrated and overwhelmed in a state of paralysis when things didn't go our way, when things didn't turn out the way that we expected. Even with, by the way, here's the punchline, our kids.
I love reframing failure to feedback. There is no failure, only feedback, right? And, you know, because then you can, it's all on perspective and how you're going to move forward. And I love when you kind of decrease the fear of failure, so to speak, then there's more chance of taking risks and creating something so much more expansive than one would have done before.
Yeah. It's the whole thing of, you know, the tightrope walker only does that death-defying stunt with the safety net underneath them. Like, that's, you know, if they didn't have the safety net, they probably wouldn't do, or at least they would have been able to practice the point to be able to do it without the safety net. Let's get to some more comments. EFT tapping is great for regulation, especially with social anxiety. Yes, we got some head nods from Janine. It's great for children with nonverbal children who don't have language to use their words. And that's another thing too. A lot of times that I'm just going to throw out here because it's a common thing. You know, a lot of times we'll tell children to use their words when they don't have, a lot of times they don't even have the words to use, or they're overwhelmed in the emotion. Maybe they do have the ability, but maybe not in that moment. So they need, you know, how many of us, when we get overwhelmed in our emotions, that we're not able to articulate what we mean as well, or express emotion as well. It's just a natural, normal human kind of fight or flight thing that we go through. This is such an incredible collaboration. Just listening to the conversation is amazing. I'm glad you appreciate it. Well, maybe one day, I know that Janine said that she's planning on doing some more stuff too. So she's going to plug her website. I don't know if she has it yet, but you'll know where to follow her. And hopefully she'll have me on her podcast when she gets one. Yeah, crossover. The greatest. Thanks for that message, Tiffany. I just started working with infants and that really helps me want to learn more about it. As caregivers, we need to humanize ourselves and give ourselves the grace as often as we give others. Yeah, and I think too, I don't want to get too, because this is a little off topic, but it's on topic. I think part of how we, you know, kind of going back to the perfectionism and how we see, and a lot of people falling into that and wanting to be perfect and being afraid to make mistakes. A lot of it does come from, you know, how we treat mistakes in the education. It's another thing that reinforces the mentality is how we treat mistakes in the education system. I believe that every test should allow for you to improve on it. That it shouldn't be just the end all be all of like, you try it once and then, you know, you don't get it right. You have one chance to get it right and then it's over. And then we don't talk about it until you have another test to test you on it at the end of the year. What it really should be about, well, okay, you didn't maybe get all the content, but how can we, you know, but you know, let me give you another opportunity to learn and study deeper and figure out what you missed. All right, okay, there's something clearly that we missed here in the content. Let's work on that. Let's build on that more, especially if it's something that we're saying is valuable and that children need to know. Now, the other thing that I believe is that I think that most tests shouldn't be paper tests where there's, you know, a right or wrong answer and you're just marking the answers and you're just asked to retain a bunch of information and then regurgitate it back on a piece of paper, because that's not how life is. That's not how we apply knowledge in real life. It should be more about skills and what can you do? How can you, you know, I'm more of a fan of like the projects and how can you put the information together and then deliver it and then talk about it, because that's more, and even the papers, like that's how we communicate. That's how we are productive in the workplace, through the conversation, through the sharing of ideas, through working on projects together and maybe independently. And, you know, I wish more of our tests were focused on those kind of things. What are your thoughts on that? And why do you think, Janine, that it is that way? Just what are your...
Oh gosh, I have no idea why, but I was thinking the same thing. Like, why don't we have kind of more varied ways of teaching, right? Because it's like one way, and then this is the test, and this is how you get the answer, and that's, you know, kind of memorize, regurgitate, and, you know, some people are skilled at that, and not everyone is. And so, but it doesn't measure someone's intelligence when, you know, a kid might have intelligence in other areas or perceiving the world differently. And then we stifle that because of the way the system is set up. So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, kids are naturally in question and in curiosity and in wonder. And we tend to stifle that, like, you know, because I said so, or don't worry about it, or stop asking questions. And, you know, then we also encourage them to find the right answer. And so that kind of starts to limit their thinking, to get into the programming that we become as adults. You know, this is the question, here's the answer, versus kids just naturally are so intuitive and, you know, like I said, curious. And so I think we tend to stifle with our traditional school system that way.
Mm. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, I wonder how that then also impacts, you know, talking about, you know, society and the values that society has through things like education. And then, like, you know, how does that impact our parenting then? And, you know, and one, the way that we see our child, because, you know, a lot of times when parents are even communicating the value of their children to other parents, when they're, you know, we're having conversation about, you know, so what are your kids up to? It's centered around education, mm-hmm. and how they're doing, mm-hmm. in the education system. And then that also impacts, you know, then a lot of parents start to feel like, well, this child is a representation of me. And if so, if the education system if they're not getting good grades at school, that is reflecting on me as a parent, and then in turn reflecting on me as a person and us as a family, when, you know, maybe the child learns differently than the way that is the one way that is being taught in the school system. And then how does that impact, how does that pressure then impact how we feel, even play into the moments to bring it back, right? To play into the moments of the pressure feeling, because at the root of it, parents really want the best thing for their children and believe that, you know, even the things like spanking, that that's what's going to be the best thing for my child so that they learn. I don't think that, you know, parents are maliciously sending children to timeout or spanking them, that they have this, you know, they have the pressure and the feeling of wanting the best. And that's what they see because they don't have the tools, and that's the way that they grew up, and that's the expectation. And, you know, maybe if I spank my child or I send my child to timeout, then they'll learn the lesson, or they'll learn to, you know, regulate their emotions so that then they can focus on their work and get better grades, or even. And tell me what your opinion too is on, you know, medicating young children, and like because they're not getting good grades in school. I would really love to know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, it's tricky because kids tend to be, medicated quickly, or, you know, kind of as a almost knee jerk reaction to try to fix the problem. You know, and I just encourage folks to try all sorts of other avenues to help, you know, work with a child's natural abilities and how they learn, you know, and rather than making it a wrongness because they're not showing up the way we've decided is one way to show up as a kid, how can we encourage that? And will they show up differently when we start to support that? And to me, I think in school, I wish they would teach emotion regulation skills and have kids like meditate, learn to meditate, quiet their mind. I mean, we would have such emotionally intelligent adults after doing years of that, right?
Yeah. And by the way, test scores will go up too.
Totally.
By the way, right? The academics, the things that we are, like the traditional measures, will go up too when they are able to emotionally break. It affects all the other things too. And I agree, it should be a whole class. It should be. And we should value it above the math and the English.
I agree.
And the science, because, you know, they're going to be able to acquire that knowledge so much more meaningfully and apply it.
Yes.
And not even just in their young life, but as they get older, in terms of working with teams and creating a positive environment to help other people work at their best. And then, you know, and then we will have more optimized teams as well, who will be more productive in their pursuits to, you know, to create the next technology for all the humanitarian needs, to create that vaccine, right? When we're all working together and we can manage our emotions, and there isn't such a, because then this also gets into, you know, the political divide and us not being able to have conversation and the emotions driving those conversations, and us not being able to navigate or manage that. And then as a result, again, stuck in paralysis and not being productive. I want to, before we go, like, and I would love to, like, I hope you guys have been enjoying the conversation, because I think I could go even deeper, but I want to bring it back down to give like some, just like, let's do like a, Let's just together right now in front of everyone, just talk about like some steps to go through when, you know, when you're feeling frustrated, and, you know, how to help yourself in that moment and then help your child. Cause I know we got a little bit more time, but I'm aiming 45 minutes. So, So I would say, let's start with step one, and then I'll, you know, you tell me what you think about it. I would say step one is recognizing your own triggers. Recognizing your own triggers. I was about to put you in there, but I think recognizing your own triggers, your own hot spots, where you're most likely to get overwhelmed in emotion, and what like frustrates you, or what makes you, what sets you off, what lights that fuse a little bit more than other things. I think that is one, figuring that out. and I got to add on two, and then I got third two, Janine. And then being able to recognize your emotions in the moment.
Yeah.
And being able to recognize like how that you feel, the way that you feel in the moment. What are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Totally. So you can be prepared of what your trigger being, like what I think what you're saying is in the present moment, you know, just aware that I'm even going into an anger response. Sometimes people are just attending to so many other things in their head, they're not even realizing how angry they're getting. And then all of a sudden blow up. Right. So for me, it's like awareness. And then how are you going to regulate? How are you going to proceed? So it's just like taking that pause, awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And you know, you need that pause. And I love calling it or describing it as a pause. And there are things that can happen in that pause. What you do in that pause is really important. And that's kind of where we're talking. Once you pause, then you have the, you know, choice of, and you also need the awareness to know like what to do for yourself in that moment, in that pause, you know, that breathing. You need to grab that water. Do you, you know, need to do the EFT tapping, right? You know, what are you going to do in that pause? But first you need to like, hold the brake, before you allow your emotions to drive you. And then it's your subconscious is coming out and you're not the one in control. And really the ones that are in control at that point are all the bad habits that you've picked up through maybe even generations and generations of bad habits.
Yeah. Programming,
the programming that you downloaded from, you know, especially from the 7 and younger time period. So you want to first know your triggers, have that awareness, then you want to, you know, recognize what your emotion is in the moment. Then you want to pause. I think it's good. Another thing to do kind of in that pause is whether you're acknowledging your feelings out loud or inwardly, I think both help. I like to acknowledging it outward makes it feel more of a release. Doing those things, because also I don't know a single person, another reason for the pause, because when you're in that emotional state, you're not going to make the best decisions. I don't know a single person who says when I'm stressed out and I'm frustrated, you know, I make the best decisions. And in that, those moments of frustration or when we are imparting the programming, we're about to program our child with whatever our response is. And it can be negative, it can be psychologically healthy or psychologically traumatic or psychologically unhealthy, harmful.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason for the pause, to take account for what we're about to imprint upon this child. I think that's a really good reason to invest the time to become aware, to take that pause. Okay, so now we've done the pause. We've calmed down. We're in a different emotional state. We did breathing. We did our tapping, whatever we need to do. Now, what do we do from that point?
Proceed mindfully. If you're now feeling regulated enough, and I'll actually hop back a little bit to add a side note. When you're talking about acknowledging how we're feeling, what's going on, I encourage folks to disconnect rather than saying, I am angry or I am sad. I'm noticing some sadness. I'm noticing some anger in my body, right? Mm-hmm. It helps to start separating yourself from being like in the emotion, not being able to see it. So that helps kind of de-escalate as well. But then, yeah, proceed mindfully. Now that you feel, are you regulated enough to proceed mindfully now to converse? Or do you need to take a time out, if you will, an adult time out to say, hey, I'm, you know, too dysregulated. Can we talk about this a little bit later if you need some more time to regulate?
Yeah. And, you know, I think even when we're talking about, and the reason I want to like relanguage and, you know, call it time in, because whether or not, I know a lot of people have different definitions for time out, But I just so that we're, you know, all clear, I want to start calling when we're taking time, you know, when we're taking time, when we're investing time, mm-hmm. That's time in, right? Whether you're investing time in yourself or investing time in your child, like that's time in. When you're forcing, you know, time away, forcing time away, then that's time out. Right. You know, we're not investing time in it. Like you go away, like you figure, like that's, and we're not focusing on solving the problem. We're not investing in solving the problem and tackling what is actually the issue here. I would language that, I would call that time in. And I love the distinction you made on, you know, you're not your emotion, and disconnecting from it so that you don't hold it so closely, like it is a possession or like it is a part of you. Yeah. That's a very good distinction. I appreciate that. So be aware, because I really want people, because I'm never able to really dive deep into it with the tech talks. I want people to leave with this having some concrete strategies and knowing what to do. You know, people have been telling me, like, I've been like, I get really frustrated, but then I hear you in my voice, like I hear you like in the back of my head, and like, okay, Mr. Chaz said to breathe, and Mr. Chaz said, right? So like, I wanna be that voice in the back of your head. So let's recount it again, so that this voice is in the back of your head, maybe during that pause, right?
Exactly.
So first you wanna prepare and be aware of what your triggers are, which your common triggers are, so that when you go into this situation, it is a lot, you're able to identify that emotion, identify that feeling a lot more readily, than, because sometimes, like you said, we're even unaware of how we're feeling and what we're projecting. So be aware, then be aware of our triggers, then we're going to be mindful and be present in the moment. And then after we're mindful and present in the moment, we can do things like, you're not your emotion, but you can acknowledge that you're having the emotion, that you're experiencing an emotion. And then, you know, you can do things to stabilize your emotions, right? You can do she's doing it. See, I wish the people who are listening on Spotify and on iTunes, you gotta come.
Oh, it's not the visuals.
Yeah, you gotta come to the show next time so you can see the visuals. You can do the EFT, the tapping, mm-hmm. that we talked about. You can also teach with children too. Just like the breathing techniques, you can teach with children, and that comes with the validating of the emotions. Of how people feel, and you know, in talking about the source of the emotion as well. And then once you've kind of, that should put you in a stage, once you've kind of destabilized, then you're able to actually solve that problem and actually handle whatever caused that trigger to happen in the first place. And then that's a place where learning can happen, where, you know, your child can learn, you can learn, you're both in a better space, you're both in a growth mindset, as opposed to a fear fixed, you know, fight or flight kind of mindset, where there's very, it's unlikely to be any learning going on. And that's how you do it. And that's what you do as, by the way, not just a parent, but also a teacher in the moment, because as teachers get very frustrated in the moment, and you have to do it at scale. And there are a few, you know, adaptations I would make for teachers too, especially if you have someone else in the room to tag that other person in, mm-hmm. so that you can do that. You can focus on that breathing. Or grab your water or do the tapping or whatever you need to do. And now the other thing that you can do, because sometimes children and people really legitimately want to be a part and want to be like, they need, like, I can calm myself down, but I just don't need you right now. And that's why it's important to know like your child's temperament and really observe and know who your child is and who you are too. And, you know, you want to create a space for that. You know, I call it, you know, a calming corner. It's called a lot of things, right? Mm-hmm. A cozy corner, a calming corner where they can go when they are feeling that overwhelmed emotion and they do need to be, you know, alone, or do just need to restabilize emotions, they can go to a space. You know, I like the spaces, and they'll appreciate the spaces that are like a little enclosed where they can feel like they can kind of be alone with, there's soft things all around, you know, like soft rugs, you know, other sensory items. Children process so much information through their sensory input. So that is a good way for when they're feeling these big emotions, it's a good outlet for them. So like soft, squishy balls, things that are visually appealing and interesting to look at, to a sensory isn't just touch, right? It's sight too. And, you know, and I'm not sponsored by Generation Mindful, but they do have a good toolkit. So if you're looking, it's everything you can create, especially if you're like the artsy, like I'm a big fan of creating it with your child, and I'm a big fan of that, and that helps them become more invested in it. But if that's not you and you know, you just need it quick, and but you're still going to teach your child what it's about, how to use it, and your child can still participate and helping to put up some of the posters and things like that, you can just order the toolkit from Generation Mindful. What are your thoughts? We're about to wrap up. Janine, what are your thoughts? Kind of give us like your last thoughts. Tell us kind of anything else that you want to tell the community, tell the world.
The world. I mean, it's coming back to having compassion with yourself and not making a wrongness to be experiencing those feelings and needing time, you know, in your soothing space, calming corner, kids, adults alike. We all need that regulation time. And I think the thing that I want to leave folks with is, you know, we're going through a lot collectively right now, and we need a lot of extra self-care. And so this is a great time to, hey, learn some breath work, learn the tapping. There's tons of YouTube videos you can check out. Just put in EFT tapping, that you can learn it really easily and start making that part of your daily practice, because that's going to show the kids too. Oh, look, we're doing it. Our caregivers are doing it. You know, we can do it too. And so they'll want to mimic. And that I think will be great to, you know, give them those skills now. So.
Yeah. And that brings up one last thing I want to talk about. Self-care and the value and the importance of your awareness, not just of your emotions and frustrating situations, but like what does recharge you, right? What puts, you know, what does emotionally investing in yourself look like, you know? And I always say that you should have like short-term, medium-term, and long-term things you do to recharge yourself. Those things in the moment, like the EFT tapping and the breathing, the water under the lip, those things, those are things that you can do in the moment, in, you know, within 10 seconds that can help kind of help you destabilize and recharge your emotions, help you get to a place where you need to be, help you put you in the state that you need to be to handle the situation. But you know, you also need medium-term things that are like, hey, like I just, you know, maybe your spouse has come home and they can, after, you know, they get settled and they're in a place, you have a conversation, whatever your routine is, they can focus on the kids so that you can take 30 minutes, 45, an hour to do, maybe it's knitting, maybe it's just listening to, you know, your favorite album, your music, maybe it is cleaning or cooking or something, or gardening or whatever it is. And if you don't have a spouse, then I really recommend, you know, find a tribe. I know you can't necessarily, I know we're not going out and seeing a lot of different people, but maybe there are a couple of people or other people, friends or family friends you can lean on where your, you know, child or children go over their house for a little bit of time, because time for yourself to recharge is super important so that you can be present for your child and show up in those moments where, you know, you're downloading information into their program that they're going to be running for the rest of their life. And so, you know, that's really important. And the long-term things, which are the things like the vacations. I really do think vacations are important. you know, to take, you know, once, and I had to become really aware. That's something that I had to just become really aware of, just like when I needed a vacation, because there was a period of time where I was like, I love what I'm doing so much. I'm not like really worried about a vacation, but you know, there was still, I still needed a vacation. Yeah. And I had to kind of build a little bit of awareness in that, so that I could really be present and show up for the people that I work with, the children and the adults. Do you have any last thoughts on self-care? I know you have to leave in like five minutes.
Do it daily, multiple times a day right now, just so needed, and make it fun. You know, self-care can be putting on your favorite song and dancing, and dance with the kids. Like, you know what I mean? Just get the whole family involved and make it fun. So it doesn't have to be always so serious. Like, I'm going to sit down and meditate right now. You know, just move your body, like get it out, you know? And so if that's like the one thing you do, just try to do something daily right now is what I would say.
Yeah. And I'd add to it, try to schedule it out, because life gets to us, and if we don't schedule it out, a lot of times we'll find a lot of reasons not to do it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Janine Prescott, for coming on the show. I love it. I feel like I'm going to have you on another time.
Well, I'm here for it.
I'll give you a little bit of space to breathe. And then we'll definitely continue to connect. Where can you talk about where people can find you?
Yeah, people can find me on Instagram and TikTok, specifically both Crefs Couch. And I do actually there are a lot of nervous system regulation tools on there, breathwork, tapping, and dialogue, conversational tools. So come check me out there. That's where there'll be other stuff coming up in the future, courses, workshops, stuff like that. But right now I'm on the TikTok and the Instagram. Come hang out.
Cool. And when you do come out with your courses, and I'm pushing and rooting for you, you can come on here and talk about what you're going to do. So that people can get an update and know, you know, where to find you and get all your good information, all your good brain stuff.
Oh, thanks so much. This was awesome.
Yeah. If you guys like the podcast and you want to support the podcast specifically, you know, especially this interactive platform, you can give vocal coins through, I think it prompts you to do that. I appreciate it. I love it. Peter out here giving me vocal. Shout out to Peter. Yes. And I'll appreciate it. You know, you guys can find me on Instagram as Mr. Chazz. You can find me MRCHAZZ on Instagram. On Facebook, it's Mr. Chazz, Mr. Chazz, MRCHAZZ. Mr. Chazz again says two Mr. Chazzes. And on TikTok, it's Tick Teach Talk, TikTeachTok. And if you want individual coaching from me, it's individual coaching, group coaching, daily tips, questions answered, online courses. You know, exclusive podcast too. I've been doing a lot of helping parents, you know, figure out how they're going to go into the new year with a plan. And I actually think that this could be the best year ever. You know, everyone's really concerned about doing the virtual learning, but this actually might be a really great opportunity to individualize the learning in a way that education hasn't been done before. You know, we got the connection. We know that children learn from the people that they like. So they got the connection piece with the parents. And then also, we also know that children learn when, you know better when the education, when they're being taught the way that they learn, and it's individualized more. Not everyone needs it necessarily as much, but everyone thrives off of it. And that's why you see like the, you know, eighth graders really should be in eighth grade, but they've been homeschooled. And so now they're going off into college or they're doing college courses because they had the opportunity for that information to be individualized. So that's the end of mine. I hope I see you guys. I'm here every 7 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this through Spotify or iTunes or eventually Google Podcasts or wherever you're listening through audio, definitely come check out the video so that you could see us and see the visuals and interact with us too. And then we can also read your comments in real time like we read the ones today. So, oh, cool. You just joined. Awesome. And Peter is a teacher. It's also open to teachers too. Cool. As teachers can also ask questions as well. And I'll even talk about different strategy, what to do in the classroom, because it is different. And because you're managing, you know, there's maybe 10 or 15 or 20 little humans that you have to, you know, be attuned to. You know, there's different things that you do there. So it's for everyone. But anyways, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you everyone for coming, for showing. Thank you for the V-Coins, Peter, and thank you for everyone who's come here. I hope to see you guys next week. We are going to stop the broadcast. Everyone say bye.
Bye.
And we're out.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?